Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
You've heard of sweatshop labor. Well, California's governor has just signed a bill restricting what employers can do in a warehouse. Vaccine mandate not so fast in New York City. And today on the show, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, IBEW Local 96, and Building Futures in the state of Rhode Island. Welcome to the Tuesday, September 28th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. We have three guests lined up today. Tommy Buffenbarger, longtime contributor to this show, is now our independent labor voice, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. He's going to talk about the defense budget. Machinists for years connected to the aerospace industry, which includes big defense contractors. We'll touch on that, foreign trade, and the crazy politics in Washington. Biden is getting everything, including the kitchen sink, thrown at him. And I'll tell you, he does not have much unity in his own party. We'll touch on that. He's trying to advance his Build Back Better agenda. And at last report, the reconciliation package, $3.5 trillion, is probably going to be whittled down because of some Democrats who are just not on board. Tommy Maloney, who comes from IBEW Local 96 out of the Boston, Massachusetts, Boston and Worcester, Massachusetts area, he's going to be our second guest, and he's going to talk about their apprenticeship programs, code of excellence, which is so important. That's one thing about the trades. They not only do their job great, they do it absolutely great, top of the line. And they have a code of excellence training program that we're going to talk about. Solar farms, that's another one, and they're exploding, especially in the Northeast and the Eastern part of the United States, off of like Virginia, North and South Carolina. Turns out that one of their signatory contractors, Mass Electric Construction, has been awarded. And currently, they're building two large-scale solar projects in central Massachusetts. We'll touch on that. And we'll also get into, apparently, with the stock market, a lot of workers have 401ks. And Tommy said they've been doing pretty good on that. So we'll touch on that as well. And our third guest is Andrew Cortez. Andrew comes to us from the Building Futures Program out of Rhode Island. The website is BFRI.org. At Building Futures, they prepare people in Rhode Island for rewarding careers in construction through their pre-apprenticeship program, and they partner with public and private entities to expand entry-level on-the-job training opportunities through the apprenticeship model. And they work in building and construction and many, many industries. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the innovations in post-secondary education, dealing with equity and justice, and preparing disenfranchised people, women, those of color, many of them in poverty, to get involved in the trades because it is a pathway to the middle class. We've said this on the show many, many times. They also have an innovative program dealing with the child care. A lot of people can't get involved in good careers because they don't have anybody to watch their kids. And they're making some inroads on that as well. So Andrew Cortez will be our third guest on the show today. California's Governor Gavin Newsom has signed into law AB 701. Now, what's AB 701? AB 701 is a bill which outlaws employer-mandated production quotas for employees that prevent workers from using the bathroom, taking state-mandated breaks, or staying safe at warehouse distribution centers like Amazon. It also requires companies to be transparent about production quotas with employees, and employees cannot be fired for meeting undisclosed quotas. The bill came through as a compromise, negotiated down from the original bill, which was pushed forward by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, which would have more directly regulated how companies are able to set those production quotas. So there was a bit of give and take, as normal. AB 701, by the way, was strongly opposed by a coalition of corporations that own or rely on warehouse distribution centers, who waged a campaign and lobbied against the bill. The final version of the bill, signed by the governor, does not mention or include any role for the California OSHA program, Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And they have a pretty powerful OSHA in the state of California. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. New York City has been temporarily blocked from implementing a vaccine mandate for nearly all adults in public school buildings that was set to go into effect yesterday. Last week, a federal district court judge declined to grant a temporary injunction sought by a group of teachers, but the teachers were able to successfully appeal that decision to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, where a single judge granted the teachers' motion for a temporary injunction against the mandate's enforcement and referred the case to a three-judge panel for a hearing that's set to take place tomorrow. Now, the city's plan will be the first vaccination mandate without any test-out option for any group of city workers. Unions representing the city's teachers and principals have been calling on the de Blasio administration to delay enforcement of the mandate, arguing that the schools are not prepared for impending staffing shortages. They claim that the district lacks an adequate plan to redeploy substitutes and central office employees to the hundreds of schools likely to face high absentee rates among teachers and staff, and that the result will be, as President Michael Mulgrew stated, a situation where we will have children, thousands of them, in an unsafe situation. Another union official noted that some schools were expecting anywhere from 30 to 100 missing personnel that would need to be replaced on short notice starting today. According to the New York Times, at least 90% of teachers and 95% of principals are already vaccinated, while the rate stands at 82% for staff members in school buildings. In the meantime, the state of New York is also laying out contingency plans to address looming staffing shortages across the state's healthcare system as the state's vaccination mandate for healthcare workers took effect yesterday. Governor Kathy Hochul announced that her administration's plans include the possible issuance of an executive order declaring a state of emergency, seeking to increase the workforce supply, enabling healthcare professionals licensed in other states or countries, recent graduates, retired, and formerly practicing healthcare professionals to practice in New York State. I mean, they're throwing out all options right now. Additionally, Governor Hochul noted that another option may include the deployment of medically trained National Guard members and collaboration with federal disaster response teams. Wow. By the way, there's new polling out by Pew Research that has found that 86% of Democratic voters have received at least one shot of the vaccine, compared to 60% of Republican voters. And you know there's been this political divide since day one. It's so large that almost every reliably blue state now has a higher vaccination rate than almost every reliably red state. Some of the vaccination gap stems from the libertarian instincts of many Republicans, according to one columnist William Galston. They understand freedom is being left alone to make their own choices, and they resent being told what to do, even if it saves their life. By the way, since Delta began circulating widely in the U.S., COVID has extracted a horrific death toll on red America. In counties where Donald Trump received at least 70% of the vote, the virus has killed about 47 out of every 100,000 people since the end of June. In counties where Trump won less than 32% of the vote, that number was down to 10 out of 100,000. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment, and they're celebrating 50 years. You can find more at ulagency.org. Before we get to a Tommy Buffenbarger, I just want to mention, after an eight-week strike, a group of Chicago-area auto mechanics has won a four-year contract. We're talking over 800 mechanics represented by IAM Local 701. They began their strike after their previous contract expired, shutting down 56 car dealerships after rejecting a contract offer from the new car dealer committee. Now, that offer, and here's why they went on strike. It included cuts to base pay and higher health care costs for workers. The agreement reached covers 35 dealerships where 600 mechanics remained on strike after 22 dealerships broke with the new car dealer committee to sign their own agreements with the striking workers. So enough was enough. They had to move forward. So hats off there to Local 701. And I believe our man on our live line right now knows that local all too well. I'm talking about Tommy Buffenbarger, retired general president of the International Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and now our independent labor voice. Hey, Tommy, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back, Flash, and great story to start off with today.
Now, you know that local very well?
I know that local very well. It's a huge automotive local, and it's similar to our local 1363 right there in Cleveland, where we represent the dealerships. And this story about some of the individual dealerships breaking ranks with their organization, the dealers' organization, to sign a contract is reminiscent of days the last time we had a big fight in Cleveland. That's what happened. So the dealers hire some professionals who come to the table and tell the workers, the mechanics, the technicians, all the people that work at a dealership what's good for them. And even the owners, Flash, once in a while, even the owners say, oh, this can't be right. Uh-huh. And what I want to know today is how many of those dealers took advantage of the Paycheck Protection Act and got money from Uncle Sam, our tax dollars, help them meet payroll, stay in business, and, you know, continue the jobs, and then want to tell the workers, well, you got to take less now.
Right.
Well, this begs to be looked at very carefully.
Well, it's interesting to note a lot of the people that are anti-government, and there are many in the country, they're the first to accept government money when times go bad. You know, it's amazing to see how that works in America. Let's talk about the politics. I know you want to get into the defense budget, and this all ties in to what's going on in Washington right now, because Biden is trying to advance his agenda, Build Back Better, and it's Build Back Better with unions. He loves unions. He wants unions to get involved in this plan to pretty much remake America. But we've got some issues here. Number one, not everybody is on his side in his own party, the Democrats. And the other part of this, the Republicans don't want to budge on raising the debt ceiling. Tommy, I'm going to let you pick it up right there, because we're at the crossroads in Washington right now, and I'd like to get your opinion on what's going on.
Well, you know, this Friday, Flash, October 1, the government's either got to have the debt ceiling raised or it all hits the fan. Everything shuts down again. And if people remember the previous government shutdowns, a lot of people suffered. When you can't get payments from the government, contractors suffer. They lay off workers. Businesses who supply the government can't get paid for the work they do, so they lay off their workers. And it just goes on and on. The one funny thing I laugh is Congress gets paid no matter what. That should stop. And so we've got this terrible thing looming on us in a nation that's still in a pandemic. And I just don't get it, what's happening with the politicians. And then in the president's own party, we've got senators like Kyrsten Sinema from, I believe, Arizona. We got Joe Manchin from West Virginia. And he's concerned that this will take our country from a meritocracy where you work hard to get ahead to handouts. Well, I got news for you. It's the corporations that have been taking the handouts all this time. It hasn't been the workers, because we still see a great disparity in the wealth in this country and what people have and what they can call their own. So going back to this whole budgetary process and what's unfolding this week is mind-numbing, that we fight about these things during a time like this. And then we have Mitch McConnell, who just can't give the president any credit for anything, especially when the president, the worst he's doing is trying to help out the constituents in McConnell's home state of Kentucky. And then I happen to still subscribe to all the defense publications, because the Machinist Union is the largest union in the defense industry. And I like to keep up with what's going on. And all this hand-wringing, oh, we got out of Afghanistan, we shouldn't have done it the way we did it. You know, we should keep troops there, and we should keep the effort up. We have spent $2 trillion at least in the 20 years in Afghanistan. No matter what we spend, you can't change a millennial's, you know, how many thousands of years cultured there. And it's time to end that war. The president did the right thing, and more people need to understand that. He got us out of a bad situation. And in fact, Flash, that should actually free up some money for his agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, what McConnell's fighting about and where they keep the waters all muddied up is it's a transfer of spending priorities. And instead of fighting wars that never end, President Biden wants to spend a few of the hard-earned American taxpayers' dollars on Americans. And it's not a giveaway because, you know what, it's going to provide jobs, good jobs, with some longevity to them. So it's a long-term positive thing for the United States. And the Republicans just can't bring themselves to do something for their country.
No, they want him to fail.
They want him to fail. And so the defense budget, this is one of the biggest expenses the American government has. And it's time to reorder and reprioritize what we spend our defense dollars on. I think the president wants to do that. They're still getting a big bump in this budget. But it's time for the leadership at the Pentagon and throughout the defense industries to sit back and instead of just grabbing dollars that are coming at them and stuffing them away in profit coffers, it's time to rethink, what do we really need for America in this type of world? What will be a post-pandemic world?
Mm-hmm.
Things are changing pretty quickly. The biggest threat to the United States is not coming from people who want another war. It's coming from our climate. It's coming from the damage we've done to this planet. And I think that's part of defense, too, is to protect ourselves from the bad things coming at us. The president's trying to do that, and we've got people with silly little arguments preventing that. And, you know, if Friday comes and they don't have this budgetary issue resolved, you know, the stock market will drop like a rock. People's pensions and 401ks will take a huge hit. And in a pandemic, it only becomes harder to build back from that. There's a lot going on this week, Flash, that we just need some common, cooler heads to prevail and common sense thinking.
Tommy, I was talking about an economist, and this was on the show last week, who said if they let that debt limit expire and not deal with it, any prolonged government shutdown will double the unemployment rate and result in millions of job losses all around the country. And you mentioned the stock market going on, so you'll see all those 401ks going down. Here's the crazy thing, Tom. The debt was accumulated, especially during the Trump administration, almost $8 trillion. You got the $2 trillion you mentioned in Afghanistan over 20 years, and we're going to be paying that down because of all the vets that are going to need VA care from now until, say, 2050. I heard projections of $8 trillion. So we got trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, and nobody seems to be concerned of that right now because they don't want Biden to succeed, it sounds like, right?
Yes, and that's what's silly about this. It shouldn't matter who the president is by party affiliation, Republican or Democrat. You want a president and the administration to succeed because it provides a benefit and something good for the American people. And what we've devolved to is simple, petty politics. And it's a shame. The people in Congress today, both parties share some blame on this, should be ashamed of themselves for accepting a paycheck from the American taxpayer for what we're getting out of them. And this is what's got me upset. Every day I read my Washington Post newspaper, I scour the news because I'm a news junkie, and this is the stuff that I can't believe I'm alive in a country that tolerates this today. And the rest of the world, Flash, for problems that exist, they're looking at us wondering, what the hell has happened to you guys?
Well, you're absolutely right. What's happened to America? Tommy, I'm going to leave it on that note. We've got a sponsored guest we got to get to, Tommy Maloney of IBEW Local 96, and he's going to talk about their apprenticeship programs and also getting into infrastructure and building back better with solar panels. IBEW's very, very involved in that. So you take care, my friend, and hang in there. We'll talk next month. All right.
Okay.
Stay safe.
Best to you, Flash, and to all your listeners. And thanks to the IBEW for great apprentice programs, too.
You got it. All right. Tommy Buffenberger, our independent labor voice. Quick break. We'll be back with Tommy Maloney right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora when you get an opportunity. Just take a minute. Sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. Always a 5-star rating is appreciated. All right, let's go to line number two. Tommy Maloney joining us from Worcester, Massachusetts, which is about 40 miles outside of Boston. He's a business manager of IBEW Local 96. That's IBEWLocal96.org, their website. And he's here to talk about a couple of things, their apprenticeship program, code of excellence, and the solar farms, which are exploding in that area. Tommy Maloney, how are we doing today, brother?
Hello, hello. We're doing well, thank you. Hoping you're well also.
You know, Lou Antonellis out of the 103 Advantage said hi to you last week. He mentioned your name. I guess you do a lot of work together with 103?
A great man, Lou Antonellis. We do. We have several projects. We've combined forces to gain that market share. So it's always good to hear from Lou.
Let's talk about the jobs. And, I mean, it's all about jobs. And, well, number one, in order to get a job, you got to go through the apprenticeship program. I want to talk about that. But let's get into the opportunities right now. And I was reading about this solar area, solar park, solar farms, and I guess there's two of them happening in your area. Maybe you can give us a rundown on what's going on right now. Go ahead.
Sure. We'll call those renewables. There are several in our area. There's more than two at the moment. They're planned out, and these are big ground arrays, 3 and 4 megawatts of clean power. Again, no emissions. It's renewables, and it helps for our baseline generation of power. So it's good to have the renewables, and we've got a long way to go with wind and solar and the rest of the renewables.
Tommy, was it difficult to connect with the contractors on this to make sure that this was all union?
We have a great advantage manning this work. because you need such a high demand for labor. I mean, it's a peak and valley. You need a lot of men at once, trained and qualified, and union halls were able to do that. You know, 40, 50, 60 man call is nothing for us. That's very difficult for a smaller contractor. They have to go to, you know, Craigslist or some online hiring service, hiring halls. But the union contractors have the ability to just call the business manager and we'll get the workforce out there.
And a very good workforce, I might add. What's a projection for the future on solar? I'm hearing all kind of good things. I'd like to hear it from you, though.
Well, I don't think that it's going to stop. Again, we need to add to our baseline generation, power generation, because we're taking nuclear plants offline and that type of thing. And coal-fired plants and fossil fuels are going by the wayside, and it has to be picked up by the renewables. So they're on rooftops, they're on ground arrays, they're in carports, they're on roof tiles. Anywhere you can put a solar panel now, people are looking to put one there. So it's an industry that keeps exploding, and it keeps getting more technical. The panels are getting better, they're getting more efficient, and we're going to benefit from that as well.
So talk to me about the training that goes in, and this is a great opportunity to highlight your apprenticeship program because it's very extensive, and we're in the world that we're in. Like you pointed out, technology is changing rapidly, so as soon as you get trained, you got to get retrained. So talk to me about the apprenticeship program, Tommy. Go ahead.
The apprenticeship program is second to none. I mean, it's really the tables have turned now. And everyone knows that a tradesman is a fine opportunity for employment for a lifetime career. There's a study been just completed from the Department of Labor, and the results are in. You know, a college degree now, wages and benefits for union construction apprenticeships rival a bachelor's degree, according to these studies. Our wages are not stagnant. You earn while you learn. And, you know, the stock market has really helped some guys that have a full career of contributions to an annuity. And now we've got annuity balances that are into the stratosphere. But getting back to the apprenticeship, again, it's a five-year program. You earn as you learn. When you're done, you have no debt and you're a qualified journeyman wireman, and it's a tremendous career. And, you know, I'm going to say that the apprenticeship that rivals the bachelor's degree is only in union apprenticeships. That would not be the same case in non-union apprenticeships. Their wages are lower, their benefits sometimes non-existent when it comes to health care, when it comes to 401ks, when it comes to retirement plans. They don't have the annuities and pensions that we have. And union is the way to go for your apprenticeship.
Is there a tug of war going on between the union and the non-union apprenticeships in your area?
I would say. I mean, we're able to recruit many of them. We can't take everyone, but we certainly get the cream of the crop. This last class that just came in, the test marks were so high. I thought they were applying for NASA. non-typical candidates with degrees and with tremendous backgrounds like I've never seen before. So again, there's been an awakening to what the building trades offer and the competitive salaries, and there's no college debt tuition. So it's a good way to go.
And I understand that part of this involves the Code of Excellence training, and I just love the way that sounds, first of all. Code of Excellence. You want a Code of Excellence. You want to make sure that anybody that comes on the job has the best training possible. Can you speak to what goes in to Local 96 Code of Excellence?
So the Code of Excellence is pretty much an agreement between the employee and the contractor. Again, the employee will give 8 for 8 and make sure that his coworkers do as well. We kind of police our own ranks. But the contractors are in partnership with us. They have an obligation to make sure all the tools and materials are on site. They have an obligation, for example, to say there's enough ladders on site. They have an obligation for the scheduling and the manpower. You know, we've got to meet deadlines, and it's a partnership, and we have to be code of excellence trained. I mean, at the end of the day, if you feel that you need some material for the next day, you make sure your foreman knows and he gets that material on site so that there's no work stoppages. So it's a partnership. And I'm proud to say I've got my code of excellence card right in my wallet now, and I've had code of excellence training. And I'm glad that my membership has as well. We have some jobs that are a code of excellence jobs. You have to have that credential to be on that certification to be on that site.
So. And typically, how long does it take to get that training for code of excellence when you get that certification?
It takes a day of training, and then the rest of the training is on the job. You would sit through a course on code of excellence. And it's kind of a practical way to work, which you might be doing anyway. A lot of these things we'd be doing anyway, you know, but it's just an agreement, more official agreement that we will give 8 for 8 and that the contractor will supply the proper tools and material and supervision. And, that comes together, and we've got a great result when that's working hand in hand.
Now, you told me you have about, 400 active members in 96, Local 96. How many of that 400 have the Code of Excellence training?
I'm going to say 85%.
Wow.
85% trained. Right. We required it with the apprentices, and we've had a couple of big jobs that were Code of Excellence jobs. Our baseball field, Polar Park, where the Woo Sox play now, the farm team for the Red Sox, the Woo Sox, with the Red Sox. That was a code of excellence job, and we had high demand on that for manpower. So everyone had to be code of excellence trained for that particular project. And it worked. It was done on time. The ball field opened on time, and it's a beautiful job. And we're very proud of that particular project. Again, that was also with the help of 103 and Lou Antonellis.
Yeah. Well, they should call 96 the 96 advantage, because you got 85% with that code of excellence. I would say that's an advantage, right?
It is an advantage. It was a task. I won't lie. It's a task to get everyone trained.
Yeah.
And we've done it, and we'll continue to do it.
Very good. So what's the projection? You know what's going on with the infrastructure and the politics in Washington's crazy this week, and hopefully it's all going to come to fruition here. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I don't know. Every day it seems scarier. But, you know, eventually we're going to have to get into this infrastructure, and that's going to include the IBEW, especially when it comes to, windmills, solar panels, things of that nature. The electrical grid, there's a big one right there. What are you hearing about the future growth of
we're looking forward to those bills getting passed and that money being earmarked for different projects. One that's front and center is the electrical vehicle charging stations. Okay, so we need that. We need to be able to charge the vehicles. Detroit needs to be able to make those automobiles, and we need to be able to plug them in and not crash the grid. And once all the vehicles are plugged in, we now have a battery backup source if there was to be a brownout on the grid. So we need the smart grid. We need the electrical vehicle charging stations. We need Detroit to go ahead with that manufacturing. So it all ties together. So, yes, we are hopeful that those bills get passed and that money is earmarked. And we need to do some major improvements on the grid, and we need to do some major projects that will generate power to add to our baseline generation of power.
Good point there. I never thought of that with all the electrical vehicles. Yeah, the grid that we have right now would crash if everybody's charging, especially if everybody's charging their cars at the same time.
Right.
It's not a good thing. We've got to improve our infrastructure. Well, we're going to leave it on that note. It's good to hear that your members are doing well with their 401ks and annuities. It doesn't last forever, but hey, you know what? Savor the moment, okay?
It does. It was a long time coming.
I hear you, brother. All right. IBEWLocal96.org. IBEWLocal96.org. You take care. Stay safe. Keep growing over there, all right?
Thank you so much. We'll continue the fight.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Andrew Cortez heads the Building Futures Program out of Rhode Island, and he's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. All connected, the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number three right now. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while. Andrew Cortez started the Building Futures Program in Rhode Island back in 2007. He's the executive director. He's the founder of it. And he's here to talk about what they have accomplished over the years. Mr. Cortez, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Well, thanks for having me.
So give us a little background, if you don't mind here, just to refresh our audience of your program. What's Building Futures all about?
Sure. Building Futures really focuses on the power of the registered apprenticeship model to benefit not only the workers that need to move into living wage jobs, but also the employers who are looking for skilled talent, and they want to figure out a predictable way to develop that talent. Registered apprenticeship is the answer for that. We all know that union construction does registered apprenticeship extremely well. So we actually started our organization by bookending that system. We do a comprehensive pre-apprenticeship to close any skill gap in the applicants. We place them into registered apprenticeship programs through an apprenticeship utilization program, which works on policy to make sure that active construction projects are employing enough apprentices to meet future workforce demand. So that's sort of where we started. But, you know, about 6 years ago, we asked ourselves, why aren't other sectors who have the same needs as construction utilizing this model? So we partnered with the state. We created an initiative called Apprenticeship Rhode Island. And since then, we've expanded the use of the model. 38 occupations now have a registered apprenticeship pathway. 1,400 people are unemployed in them. 54% are from underrepresented populations. It's been a great run. We are very interested in expanding the use of this model because it's equitable.
So you're saying you modeled this after the union apprenticeship programs? Are we talking like 4-5 year earn while you learn type of programs, very similar to what the trades do?
Very similar. It depends a lot on the occupation that we're apprenticing. So, for instance, we partnered with SEIU and the healthcare system around 13 different healthcare occupations. The length of the program depends on which occupation it is. You know, a medical coder is not going to take the same length of time as an ultrasound technician. But very similar to the union construction apprenticeship model, you know, the union sector has really figured out how to use that model well. It's a collectively bargained benefit. The employer needs skilled workers. The union wants to develop their membership. both contribute equally to a joint fund which supplies high-quality registered apprenticeship programming. Similarly, other sectors can take a page out of that book and figure it out for their respective sectors and the occupations and the workforce needs they're looking to meet.
Website is BFRI.org, Building Futures Rhode Island, BFRI.org. And if you go to that website, you'll see a story. You mentioned the Service Employees International Union. And what piqued my interest is childcare. And Andrew, as you know, there's a lot of people that want a better career, but they can't get that career because of kids. And they don't have proper child care. And child care is, Jesus, it's ridiculously expensive today. So they have to get a good job in order to pay for that child care. Now, what's going on in Rhode Island and Building Futures? Because apparently you're trying to bridge that gap. What's the story there?
Well, you know, let me focus on that SEIU model because it's a really innovative adaptation of registered apprenticeship. So we have family child care providers all throughout, you know, some of the lower income neighborhoods within our urban core cities. These family child care providers, predominantly Latino women, sole proprietors, who are looking to really increase their craft. And, you know, these aren't daycare workers. These are early childhood educators. So SEIU smartly said, well, okay, let's figure out a model where we collectively bargain for these folks. And they figured that out in partnership with the state. Now the next question is, well, how do we take the registered apprenticeship model and help upskill the workforce so we can have more predictable availability of childcare options and a highly trained and very professional early childhood educator workforce? And so we adapted the apprenticeship model to accomplish that. SEIU provides some administrative support to these sole proprietors. They have an education support fund, which helps coordinate the actual educational components. Family child care providers enter the apprenticeship program supported by great mentorship models that have been put in place. And they move from, you know, being a family child care provider to earning their child development associate certification, which is a national certification, ensuring that they're providing the best quality care. And so we have two problems that we're addressing through this. One, there's a shortage of child care options, so we have to have a workforce available to provide for it. And two, how do you develop that workforce? Well, you do it through collectively bargained registered apprenticeship.
You're getting a lot of buy-in on this program?
Absolutely. You know, and it's interesting because it's an adaptation because you have sole proprietors. So without the union aggregating all of those sole proprietors together, it would be difficult to set up a model. Because how can you be an apprentice to yourself? It's the first time this has been done in the country, quite honestly. And we expect this model to be taken up around the nation as folks are struggling with these very issues.
That was my next question. You already answered it. I was just going to say, I would imagine other states are going to pick up on this. This is a great idea. Great idea. Well, we often say, especially let's focus on the trades, if you don't mind. That if you get involved in a pre-apprenticeship program, an apprenticeship program, whatever, it's a four-year or five-year, it's a pathway to the middle class. I've heard that time and time again. And in Rhode Island, no different. I'm just wondering where you're going with that, because there's a lot of, I guess it's the underserved, the disadvantaged population. Inner city areas, people feel that there's no way out. Maybe they drop out of high school. And I mean, you know what's going on there. And there's a lot of that going on in America. I'm just wondering how you're doing in Rhode Island, targeting that population and telling them, you know what? There is a better way out. There's a better life out there if you get involved in the trades. Can you speak to that, Andrew?
Oh, absolutely. This is near and dear to my heart. This was my own pathway. So I understand the transformative power it can have, especially for people who are experiencing poverty. So we've continued to operate our pre-apprenticeship program continuously throughout the pandemic. The construction sector is an essential sector of our economy. It's not taken a pause. We've been placing people throughout. But honestly, we do not have to recruit anymore, except for women. That is the only population we do specific recruitment for. Minority males find us just fine. We have 14, every time we run a training cycle in our pre-apprenticeship program, we have 14 training slots available. Over 100 people are interested in those 14 slots. So the word is out there that this is an effective path to move from poverty to the middle class. And we've proven it time and time again. And I'm very proud that, you know, hundreds of people have been placed since the last time we spoke. Uh-huh. We are up to 350 people in 12 different union trade occupations. What I'm really proud of is if you look at our graduates and you say, all right, what happened to them 1 year after they were placed in apprenticeship? 95% are still there. That's been consistent throughout our history. And when we do a 10-year look back, 80% of our graduates are still in the industry contributing. They're union leaders. They are running projects as superintendents. All of, you know, and this is what people claim is the hard to serve population. There's a lot of barriers facing people in poverty, but you know what? We are talking about 80% minority, and we have 50% formerly incarcerated, and I'm very proud to say that we have less than 2% recidivism. So, you know, it just goes to show if you can give people the means to earn a meaningful living where they can support their family, people don't have to turn to other means that have other societal impacts. So we know this time-tested model works well. We just have to make sure that people are aware of the opportunity, they're well-prepared to succeed, that they succeed better than somebody walking in off the street, and that there's enough demand out there for apprentices to keep this all going.
Now, you mentioned women, and are we getting into the childcare element here as far as women getting involved in the trades? What's your take on that?
Well, that's one of the barriers. I think there is just still a stigma around construction trade occupations that it's a male-dominated industry. And, you know, let's be realistic. Right now, that is true. However, it's one of the few places where you have equal pay for equal work. You have strong benefit packages which can provide for things like child care or health care or annuity or a pension, all of the things that families need, those types of supports to help somebody succeed. It's a really, really strong path. You know, I have to call out the iron workers. You know, we work with all of our union partners, and they're all great, and they all want more women. The iron workers have really figured out on both a national level and a local level how they can make that happen. So they draw a lot of our women graduates into their program, and they're incredibly successful within it.
Oh, I know. We feature that on the show. They have maternity. They have 12 weeks maternity leave, and that's the first union. Yeah, first union in the country to do that kind of thing. I just want to let you know we record this show out of Iron Workers Local 17 in Cleveland, Ohio. I just wanted to throw that plug out there. They're also a sponsor of the show. Yeah, they do a great job. Great bunch of guys. Well, this sounds great. I like what's going on over there in Rhode Island, and hopefully that model, the model that you talked about earlier in the segment, is going to be picked up by other states. Nothing happening right now, or are you just making some inroads on that?
Oh, no. I would say that it is an active dialogue across the country right now. You know, and that's the great thing about partnering with labor. When you have organized labor who's out there looking to ensure that the workforce they represent has all the opportunities they deserve and society needs, you can move things a lot faster. So we've really enjoyed our partnership with SEIU, both on the healthcare side and the early childhood education side. You know, anytime there's a union representing workers, we have more power to move the model. Registered apprenticeship is union neutral. It really lifts up workers, and it's a good model, period. However, when you partner it with a union and the collective bargaining rights, you really have a recipe for success. It's been proven
there
time and time again, and we're seeing it over and over.
I love what you're saying, buddy. BFRI, Building Futures Rhode Island, BFRI.org. Andrew Cortez, Executive Director, you take care. You're doing good things over there. Keep in touch with us, okay?
I will, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Flesh.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Virginia AFL-CIO and the Southeast Laborers Council. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.